live from Indianapolis, Indiana. Welcome to the Crossroads Sports Radio Show, presented by Scott K. Nichols and State Farm Insurance. And now, here's your hosts, Brandon Reif and Jonathan Birdsong.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Crossroads Sports Radio, episode number 166. I'm your host, Brandon Reif, joined as always by my man, Jonathan Birdsong. JB, how's it going?
Man, it's going pretty well, man, on this fine spring day in the Circle City, man. It rained a little. The sun is out. I mean, you know, we've had everything except for a little tornado, which I'm fine with not having. But, you know, other than that, man, great spring day here in the Circle City.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a big show this evening lined up. We've got NBA playoff talks. This NBA playoffs have started. Been some surprises, some no surprises. We've got, it is the month of May. It is the final week of May. Memorial Day is approaching. We have the Indy 500 this weekend. Yep. So we're going to break down Indy 500. We also have a special guest, friend of the program, Danny Bridges from the Indianapolis Recorder. Will be joining us at the bottom of the hour. We'll be talking Indy 500. We'll get his hot takes on the Indiana Pacers and the offseason situation. And then also, we're going to ask him about this two-seater with Mario Andretti that he's done. So we're going to ask him how that was out at the track. So we'll be talking to him later on this evening. John, we've got some quick hitters to talk about. Phil, winning the PGA Championship. Age 50, getting a big win there. Your boy Julio Jones just getting outed on live TV. Got that to talk about. Your boy Adam Vinatieri retiring. We'll talk a little about that. I thought he was already retired, but apparently he wasn't.
Right.
And then we'll finish the show off. So big show tonight.
Right, man. Let's just deep dive into this. I mean, what do you want? We can probably talk about NBA. What do you want to talk about first? NBA or PGA? Don't really matter.
Let's do NBA playoffs first. So NBA playoffs, they have begun. First off, let's talk Knicks and Hawks. Knicks and Hawks series going. It's going to be a tooth and nail one. Trae Young getting compared to Reggie Miller with his antics at the Garden. The Knicks killer. I sent you a text. I said the Garden is back. The Mecca is back. It was live. It was popping. And then they let it go. They end up losing. Julius Randle did not have a good game the other night. Game two is tonight. I put it on Twitter earlier. It's not a must-win game tonight for the Knicks, but it's a must-win tonight for the Knicks. You can't go down 0-2 at home and then go on the road. It would unravel everything that they've done this year.
Right, even to the Atlanta Hawks, man. And what a great – what a grab me on I won't even talk about what ESPN was trying to sell us earlier on today, man, with Trae Young, comparing Trae Young to Reggie Miller. I get it that he had a great game. I get it that he kind of put the Atlanta Hawks on his back in game one and drew fouls and hit big shots and whatnot. It was a real tooth-and-nail kind of game. I think, like you said, it's going to be a tooth-and-nail kind of series. I think even last week we said that series probably was going to be something that's probably going to that we see go seven or six or seven. So, man, great coaching on both sides, man. You know, with Dave McMillan for the Hawks and with Tibbs, with the Knicks, man. The Knicks just didn't hit shots. Their players were off. Whether it was Julius Randle who shot woefully, I think he shot like 40 in the 40% tower range. And he's kind of, like I said, they kind of depend on him to shoot. You know what I'm saying? 47 or better, with him being a 4 or 5 guy. You know what I'm saying? And then who else? I mean, again, some of the other guys, Burks. I think Burks is the only one that kind of kept him in it from a scoring standpoint. But like Quickly and even Derrick Rose kind of struggled with their shots. So I kind of expect a bounce back game for the Knicks tonight. You're right; they can't. You don't work all season to get home court advantage. And I think the Knicks at one point were even kind of flirting with the third seed in the East. But you don't flirt. You don't work all season. Even though everybody kind of had written the Knicks out going into the season. You don't come into the season. You don't work so hard for home court advantage to basically concede to the lower seed. So it's not necessarily that the Atlanta Hawks are just, you know what I'm saying, ultimate home, you know what I'm saying, home warriors themselves and whatnot. But again, you know what I'm saying, that with fans kind of coming back, you know what I'm saying, even then 20-25% with the, what I know with the NBA, NBA has kind of allowed, you know what I'm saying, fan support to kind of come back. You know what I'm saying, you don't want you know what I'm saying, it's almost been as a drought in Atlanta as it been with the Knicks as far as like as far as playoff runs are concerned. So again, those fans are going to be, you know what I'm saying, it's crazy and wanting to see the Hawks win and whatnot. You don't want to go out you potentially want to go out and get swept. The Knicks are too good, I feel, to get swept. These teams are too evenly matched, right? But again, so I kind of, you said it, man. It's a game that they have to win tonight.
Yeah, for sure. You know, the silver lining for the Knicks, you lost by two, but Randall, your best player, had a horrible game. I thought he forced a lot of threes. And the fact that the last play call for them, that's not the type of play that you want. You know, it took so long to develop. You only had 2 seconds, and he's trying to catch it and then do a spin move fadeaway. Like, it just didn't seem right. I've heard people talk about Tibbs. Like, Tibbs notoriously is known as a good regular season coach and just can't coach in the playoffs. So there's that some Knicks fans are going to be a little curious about. But listen, I think the Knicks get it done tonight. They are 2-point favorites tonight against the Hawks. I think that's about right. Because I think, though, when it goes to Atlanta may end up being like a 4-point favorite when it goes to Atlanta. I really do. I think they're going to be a 4 or 5-point favorite by the time there. I mean, 80% right now of the bets are on the Knicks tonight. So the public is on the Knicks tonight to bounce back. I do think they do as well. They got to have a shooting night. Julius Randle's got to pick his spots. I still think he steps up and just shoots three at the most inopportune time. Derrick Rose hit some clutch shots there at the end the other night. It's funny because the Knicks fan base in the media won't razz Julius Randle for having a bad game like that, you know. But if you think back, Carmelo Anthony, name some of these other guys, that they would have got ripped just as much, you know, for them. So Randle kind of got a pass. I also think tonight with him getting the most improved award, trophy, the presentation is going to be before the game. I think that's going to give him a little bit more of a hype job. I think Randall probably goes out for 27 and 9 or so tonight.
Yeah, I wouldn't be mad at that. He just can't, like you said, he can't settle for the outside shot. He's been known to hit him, but I think he just kind of he felt like he almost turned into like Larry Bird, or I mean, I'm sorry, not Larry. I want to say Larry Bird. All right, that's an older. I think he kind of turned into Carmelo Anthony. He kind of settled for a lot of jump shots when he basically had. Well, I will say this though, Brandon, playing Atlanta is a little bit different monster than playing anybody else. He's not necessarily the biggest guy on the court. You know what I'm saying? They do have a nice little front line of rotation of players, whether it's John Collins or the rookie. I don't want to mess up his name, but the rookie from USC. Oh my God, his name. It's a lot of alliteration. I don't want to mess up his last name, but and then they also have the kid that got from they traded for from Houston. So they have a lot of a lot of guys that can kind of throw. They did. They kind of threw his way to kind of clog up that lane so it doesn't get easy buckets around the rim. But again, man, I think, you know what I'm saying, he is an all-star for sure. That he was for sure this year. He is most improved player this year. I kind of think he puts the Knicks on his back. I'm not ready to say – I'm not hating on Trae Young. Kudos to Trae Young for getting that dub and hitting that shot. But, you know what I'm saying, let's not just start automatically putting him into a Knick killer type of category just yet, especially when this ain't even the Knicks that, you know, that's even comparable to some of the Patrick Ewing and Charles Oakley Knicks themselves. Whoever kind of comes out of this, Brandon, has got a lot to prove. As far as, like, you know what I'm saying, they're getting their playoff feet wet, you know what I'm saying? So, again,
right,
that's kind of why I said it's going to go 7, you know what I mean? I really think it's going to go 7, and it's going to be definitely a nail-biter.
Yeah, Atlanta's no slouch. I think Atlanta could easily win tonight. I just think tonight's the next time. I think, yeah, it's going to go, like you said, back and forth all series long. These two teams are pretty even there. You know, the shots that Julius takes from the outside is pretty much kind of what they would want if they had a Trae Young type on their team to do
right,
this type of
right,
shots.
Right.
So But yeah, so that series is 1-0 Hawks tonight. Knicks try to even it up. Looking at the other matchup this evening, the Philadelphia 76ers, the number one seed, taking on Washington. Washington kind of hung around for the first quarter. We kind of expected them to. And then Philly just kind of put their force in on them. Embiid was hurt, right. or excuse me, Embiid was in foul trouble. That's kind of where Washington made their mark. They're going to need a spectacular performance tonight. It's going to have to be Beal scoring probably high 30s, 40 points tonight if they want to have a chance. If Russell Westbrook is the one that's having the 30-something point game or the 40% game, this game's a blowout for Philly because Russ is not the shooter. He's not the guy to have that. Russ is your triple-double guy of 12 points, 28 rebounds, you know, something like crazy like that. But for the points, right. Washington have a chance. Beal's got to have that big game.
They also got to – Washington, for them to have a good game, they got to cut down on their turnovers. They turned the ball over way too much against in the first game. They did take advantage because they are the quicker team. Russ, you're talking about somebody putting their stamp on the team. Russ has made this team play faster. It was just kind of like the new NBA, you know what I'm saying? And they played pretty good defense, and because they nullified – they couldn't beat in foul trouble, they kind of nullified – the Philadelphia's, you know, saying distinct advantage. So, but again, they weren't able to foul and beat out. He came back in and he immediately put his stamp on the game. And he, like I said, they don't have anything they can kind of match. They don't have anything. The Washington Wizards don't have anything they can match up with Joel Embiid, size wise or even production wise to equal what he can do. He blocks shots. He scores. He rebounds. You know what I'm saying? He's not necessarily the catalyst because I'll be honest with you, man, Brandon. When I watched Ben Simmons play with Allen B, it's like he's it's one thing for Doc Rivers to kind of put in a system to where he doesn't even put Ben Simmons in position to take bad three-pointers, right? That doesn't even happen anymore. But my goodness, man, he kind of also shied away from even taking like baby hooks sometimes from time to time. If it wasn't a dunk or like a layup, you know what I mean? He kind of shied away from his offensive game. And if Philadelphia is supposed to take it to the next level, which they built a resume to be the number one overall seed in the East. He can't shy away from his offense totally. I get it that you're not a strong 3-point shooter. I get it. You know what I'm saying? The 17 footers, you know what I'm saying, or the free throw line Jays kind of scare you or whatever. But like, hey man, you 6'9", go get it. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? You have the advantage. You have the advantage in the post. You got the advantage on most anybody who's guarding you, including Russ, including Beal. Include anybody that kind of switches out on you, you know, whatever the case may be. But like, nah, man, not to necessarily nitpick everything. But like, obviously I picked the Sixers to win this series. Brandon, I think it's a gentleman sweep. To be honest with you, I think they beat them 4-1.
Okay. Yeah, I think Philly easily wins tonight. And I end up thinking it goes 4-0 Philadelphia. I do. Sorry, Washington. Look at the other matchup, Milwaukee and Miami. John, Tyler Hero has not shown up. He's digressed. Bucks got a good win on game one. It was a little streak to a text. I said, nice defense by Giannis. And then, of course, they won the game in overtime at home. Then they win the second game. So Milwaukee's up 2-0. Against Miami. Miami, I don't know if they've got life in them or not, but this is looking like a gentleman's sweep to me. I think it goes 4-1 Milwaukee. I think they just end up overpowering him this year.
Yeah, Bam Adebayo, as good as he's emerged to be last year and even this year. He's played well. He's had to play well against Giannis, man. Giannis probably should be the MVP, my personal opinion. I think it goes to somebody else. But Giannis should be the MVP. He's definitely MVP. He's basically the best player on the court with Miami. Again, Jimmy Butler's not 100%. This is a team that doesn't necessarily make excuses. And even with their regression of Tyler Hero, he's getting minutes, and so they're letting him play. Unlike our homie Luke Kennard with the Clippers, I know we'll get to that here in a little bit, but the special magic that the shots that he hit in the bubble or even some of the, you know what I'm saying, the dual point guard role that he kind of point guard shooting guard role that he played last year, you know what I'm saying, basically they were thinking about trading Kendrick Nunn with the emergence of Tyler Hero, and then good thing that they didn't, right? Because none has played, none has kind of powered through when and again, like I said, Tyler Hero's kind of, I don't want to give him the title of zero, you know what I'm saying? I don't want to put that moniker on him just yet, man. I think he just hit a sophomore wall, second year wall. And the shots, like I said, some of the shots that he made aren't just going down just yet at all. That might have to do something with the quick turnaround from the last year's finals to, you know what I'm saying, to playing season start or what.
Well, I think you're giving too much credit. I don't think he's Tyler the Zero. I don't think he's even Tyler Hero. I think he's turned himself into Tyler the Hero. I think he's just ended up being too full of himself and his Instagram model girlfriend and everything, and it kind of got to his head down there in Miami. And now he's regressed.
Not putting the work in is what you're saying? Maybe so.
Exactly.
Maybe so. But, like, no, man, to get back to the series, mental toughness can take you a long way. The Miami Heat got plenty of that from the front office to what they put on the court. What they are probably still missing, Brandon, think about the trade that they made to bring in Victor Oladipo. They did trade away Kelly Olynyk, another big body that you could use for fouls and to also draw out Giannis, you know what I'm saying, away from the basket. So they don't necessarily have the rotation of big men that they would normally have to kind of go at Giannis. So Bam Adebayo is kind of just out there on the island by itself, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
All-star caliber player that he might be, you know what I'm saying? You need as many bodies that you can throw at Giannis, not to shade. I don't necessarily talk well of him, his game, Brook Lopez as well, man. You know what I'm saying? Brook Lopez in this series, I think he's averaging he's double digits. I know he's double digits, double rebounds for himself. So again, that front line of Miami is kind of, I'm sorry, the front line of the Bucks is giving them fits. And then when you think about the heroics from game one, whether it was a heady steal by Holiday or even the bucket that I know our Crossroads Sports Rip Whipping Boy, that he always gets the shits from you. Middleton hit the shot to basically kind of win the game. So Giannis has gotten the support from the teammates that he didn't necessarily have in the past. But to be honest, man, I say Miami can win one. I wouldn't be surprised if the Miami Heat get swept by the Bucks. But I think Miami gets win. I think they win one because after your personal pride kind of kicks in after a 32 point loss. You know what I'm saying? And they've had extended days of rest. You know what I'm saying? They don't play tonight. I don't believe. I think they play
tomorrow.
They play tomorrow, so they get an extended days of rest. So. I think they get up for that game and they win that game. But this series is definitely the Bucks to win.
Okay. Looking at the other one, and Brooklyn Nets are up 2-0 on the Celtics. The Celtics just need to roll over and let the Nets pet their belly. Just overmatched. No Jalen Brown. That's a big key for the Celtics. Jason Tatum hurt now. Nets are rolling, John. They are... The big three, they're playing well together, meshing well. Joe Harris is hitting threes. He's had, 16 points, 15 points in the first quarter last night. James Harden's being that facilitator. Durant's playing well on the offensive and the defensive end. This very well could be a regular sweep if Boston doesn't get off the mat. They're at a standing eight count right now, I feel.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Boston made it real interesting. The first half, against Brooklyn, they didn't bring out the guns in the second half, nor did they bring out the guns in the second game at all. They don't really have an inside presence that you have to respect. You know what I mean? They have guys that can crash boards. They have guys that can get, you know, saying junk plays or garbage minute type of plays or whatever. They got guys that kind of depend upon to get offensive rebounds, and that's kind of it, not necessarily putbacks. But if the jump shots for the Boston Celtics ain't hitting, they ain't out winning. And unfortunately, on the other side of them, who they matched up against, the Brooklyn Nets, they got better jump shooters. They got more efficient, you know what I'm saying, jump shooters. Even Joel Harris. is a more quality jump shooter than what they have right now. If Brad can tinker and figure out some way how to, you know what I'm saying, manage. The bright spot that they have, Boston, is, I would say, Marcus Smart. But even him, you know what I'm saying, you can't expect Marcus Smart to be, you know what I'm saying, this one-man show or you know what I'm saying, to try to take on the all-star MVP powers of the Brooklyn Nets. So, I don't know. Again, like I said, they had them. It looked like it was going to be a real interesting series. That the first half of game one, and then the second half came, and Boston built a whole house of bricks, and that was match game. So I did see an interesting stat though, Brandon, while we're talking about it, because like I said, you said it, the Nets are going to win this series. But did you know Blake Griffin hadn't dunked zero times? He had zero dunks in the last year that he played for the Detroit Pistons. Zero dunks.
How many has he got now?
I think he had like three or four last night, but he had zero dunks for his last year with the Detroit Pistons, man. So, like, again, in that matchup, when you're playing the Brooklyn Nets, you have to keep everybody honest. You know what I'm saying? And again, they just got a little bit more firepower, even with the reserves with Blake Griffin and Harris. They have and shoot Eden Green. If when I think about it,
Jeff I have Green, a big Claxton fan.
Oh yeah, I can't forget about him as well. So yeah, if Boston, I'll be surprised, but I don't think they will. I think this is a sweep, and it goes to the Brooklyn Nets.
Okay, shocker with how this series could have been, how we kind of thought it would be a great series, but yeah, it's just showing the dominance that the Brooklyn Nets have. And Durant's not showing no. If he can stay healthy. If he continues to stay healthy, they're going to the NBA Finals. I still believe it wholeheartedly. Even getting past Philadelphia, I can't trust Joel Embiid. I think Embiid will get hurt before Durant would. So we'll see. Looking west side, the number one team in the West, the number one seed Utah Jazz, down 1-0 against the Memphis Grizzlies tonight, 10:00 game two. Charles Barkley's probably going to give his guarantee. Jazz looking to bounce back. Donovan Mitchell, I think, is looking likely to play tonight. They're going to need, I feel like, him on a pissed off Jazz team trying to even this series.
Bit of a shocker, because even without Donovan Mitchell, you would think that the Utah Jazz were deep enough, because they got 2 6 men a year candidates, right? And Clarkson won, but Joe Ingles was also. I was like, dude. Brandon, how can you have 2 6 men of the year candidates? Like, somebody's got to be a 6 man, somebody's got to be a 7 man. But I digress. But you feel like they had enough, even to beat a young team, a young minded team like the Memphis Grizzlies, and that wasn't the case at all. Somebody could say Memphis is coming. You know what I'm saying? They are an uprising team. You know what I'm saying? They did beat the Warriors. It's not necessarily the Warriors with. You know, when they're all cylinders are running, when they have, you know, the Splash Brothers and whatnot kind of going for them. But they did beat the Warriors. So I think the Grizzlies kind of went in to these playoffs. They went into these playoffs with some confidence. You know, there's a lot of lottery picks, there's two Dukies on their bench in Jones and Ty Jones and Grayson Allen. So there's a lot of confidence and a lot of arrogance, like and winning pride, right? So they kind of just went in Utah with that in mind, and they're not necessarily worried about, you know what I'm saying, if Donovan Mitchell wasn't going to play or not. So stung them, caught them with the pants down, all that. And now we kind of got a series, man, because, you know what I'm saying, nobody wants to lose a game on their home court, especially at the higher seed. So it makes it a tougher uphill battle for Utah. Now Utah has to win tonight. They have to win tonight, and they got to win at least one in Phoenix. I'm sorry.
And it doesn't help the stigma how kind of we all went into this not believing in Utah. Now after that game, it was like, well, see, it's Utah. Here they are again. They can't produce in the playoffs. Here we go. Same old Utah. So it doesn't give them the good look.
Right. But then, so there's more story to this puzzle, and more right. Donovan Mitchell upset with the team for holding him out. bunch of, you know what I'm saying, talk, you know what I'm saying, on the dark web, a bunch of talk on ESPN and whatnot about how he, you know what I'm saying, he had his own trainer, didn't use Utah Jazz's trainer, and now, you know what I'm saying, there's a split, you know what I'm saying, with him in the organization, you know what I'm saying, seemingly. I'm just going by what has been reported.
Right.
You know what I mean? That doesn't bode well for teams trying to win a championship or trying to get out of the West. You know what I mean? Everybody's got to be on the same page. Everybody's got to kind of be going the same direction. I would assume, Brandon, again, who knows, man? I get it. You know, everybody does, you know, saying even Tom Brady the Great, right, has his own training regimen, his own training people outside of even, you know what I'm saying, that's one of the reasons why he left New England. But at some point, you know what I'm saying, you have to trust. There has to be some form of trust on all sides. So,
right.
Utah didn't clear him. You know what I mean? Which is kind of weird. You know what I mean? Even though he was ready to go, but you know they value what they have in Diamond Nav in the long term. You see what I'm saying? And I think that's why they kind of sit him out. I wouldn't expect. I think the front office thought they had enough to win without him playing Memphis. You know what I mean? But that's not the case, you know. So he's gonna have. I think he's gonna play, like you said. Whether he has a lot of rust or a little bit, remains to be seen. Again, Brandon, they have enough team. They should, right, on paper, to beat the Memphis Grizzlies. And but if they don't get it done tonight, then you know what I'm saying, I don't think necessarily heads are gonna roll. But there's gonna be some more eye rolling between, you know what I'm saying, Donovan Mitchell and the front office for sure.
Does he want out?
They've been super supportive over the years, been there. So I can't imagine. You never know the psyche of these athletes that we have playing.
I think he does.
Organizations that. So you don't know the role. So Utah is just like San Antonio. You never know the. You know what I'm saying? It's not L.A. It's not Miami. It's not the New York market. They all get it, but though I don't know, man. The organization has been good to him. And I don't mean like he just because they've been good to him that he ain't got a he's got to sacrifice. You know what I'm saying? Going to play with another superstar if that kind of opens up for him. But they've been supportive of him. You know what I'm saying? From legislation and fans. You know what I'm saying? Stupid fans saying stupid stuff and you know what I'm saying? All kind of stuff that kind of, you know what I'm saying, happened since he's been there. You know what I mean? I don't know, man. Sometimes, man, and like I said, they built a winner, you know what I'm saying, around him. You know what I'm saying? He can't say that they haven't tried, you know?
Right.
Is Kevin Durant running through that door to go play for Utah or LeBron or anybody on there? No, they're not. But, you know what I'm saying, other players do find value in playing with Utah. What they traded for, Conley. And he hasn't said a peep or bad peep about playing for Utah, you know
right.
what I mean? So. I hope whatever fence that was knocked down can be mended. You know what I mean? Utah hasn't necessarily won a championship or anything of note. Or they've been to a championship. They haven't been to a championship for over 30 years, I feel like, right?
Bring it here.
But they are one of the premier, if premier organizations in the NBA. I would say that. Premier being like, man, you know what I'm saying? This is take losing. Kindly in
right.
Utah, you know what I'm saying? They don't like living. They don't like living in a lottery like Utah. You know what I'm saying? So if he's pissed or a little, you know what I'm saying, feeling dejected or whatever because they had to, you know what I'm saying, this trainer didn't like this trainer's method of getting back on the court. Again, you know what I'm saying? There's always that word out there. I'm sorry. There's a misunderstanding. Let's try to move on from this.
I'll tell you this. I would love for the Pacers to go out somehow and get yourself a Donovan Mitchell player. But where I think he would flourish, because I don't think he's set to win a championship as the number one. I really don't. But a team
okay.
that has been looking for a number two, we've talked about it for months, that needs a number two that's solid, Milwaukee Bucks. If they could somehow work out a deal and get Donovan Mitchell
oh, wow.
and have him number two to
oh,
Giannis,
wow.
I think that immediately puts them up there to that echelon with the Brooklyn Nets. Because we talked about it. That'd be a true number two over Middleton, I feel.
Brandon, that might be illegal. If they could somehow trade if they can somehow trade a player, an all-star level player that's already on the Bucks, let's just say Milton. I kind of like Holiday there for them, but let's just say it's Milton and some draft picks or some other young players that they already have, and they can get Donovan Mitchell that, and he can bring Donovan Mitchell and have that trio in Milwaukee. That might be illegal, but I don't know. I don't know, Brandon. You might be.
You want him to stay. I know you do.
I want him to stay. It kind of keeps the competitive balance of the NBA. And I know that where's that at now, right? I mean, everybody's talking to L.A. and Brooklyn. But,
right.
I kind of like him playing in Utah.
Okay. Moving on to the next one.
Uh-oh. Oh, man.
John, I've got to play it. You were right. And go ahead and clip that audio part. The Los Angeles Clippers are dead, John. They're dead. Playoff P, pandemic P. Nobody else is showing up on this team. It's Kawhi and maybe half of Paul George against the Luka and the Maverick. The Clippers are 0-2, and they're going on the road now, John. I think it's damn near a wrap.
I try to wrap my mind around how this could not be a sweep for the Dallas Mavericks, and
they match up so well.
They match up so well. Where so long as Tim Hardaway Jr. is playing out his mind. I think in Luka again, Luka's a walking, talking triple double. Not like Russ, because like he doesn't necessarily struggle with his jump shot. Right. Sometimes he takes bad shots. I'll say that, but he doesn't necessarily struggle with hitting his jump shots or any other rainbow circus shots. Right. But Tim Hardaway Jr. is playing like a man with one of the big contracts, right? And that's kind of what he's a free agent this year, and he's kind of living up to his free agent, wanting to ask for, you know what I'm saying, or turn down. You know, we live in the NBA now, Brandon, where guys turn down $90 million contracts. So if Dallas or any other team offered Tim Hardaway a $90 million contract, I wouldn't be surprised the way he's playing, right?
Right.
And I don't think that's necessarily happened last year. He was inconsistent for them from an offensive standpoint last year, for sure. They also didn't have the services of one unicorn at all. You know what I'm saying? Last year, because Porzingis was hurt as he often is, in this route, and even in the two games, though he's not rebounding the ball anything close to like Miles Turner levels. Okay, he's averaging like 17. And they don't have anything. They tried Serge Ibaka. They tried Zubac. They won't even let DeMarcus Cousins come off the bench. You know what I'm saying? To get embarrassed, I guess. And like I said, that three-headed monster that they have in Dallas is kind of this quicker, faster, better. And it's not like Kawhi is having a bad offensive series itself. It's also not, except for three. Paul George is having bad, you know what I'm saying, percentage. He found the wrong time to, you know what I'm saying, to have a bad three.
He always does at this time.
Right.
Pandemic P.
Pandemic, right. Even the great Sid Bellis, who was backing them all season, to finally join the bandwagon of Pandemic P. Panic P. I think. And even they brought in Rondo to improve the point guard position, because Patrick Beverley, he's not a playmaker. He's not a guy that you run the offense through or set up or even necessarily to depend upon to get buckets for you. But Rondo again is long in the tooth. You know what I mean? They really realistically need somebody to be a younger. You know what I'm saying? They damn near need a Jamal Murray type, a Devin Booker type. Of course, who wouldn't take those guys? But I'm saying they need a guy that can score and put pressure on Luka. Who's putting pressure on Luka right now? So when they come back down to he's basically chilling on defense, because he ain't got to worry about the point guard matchup. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And if he's guarding Paul George, he ain't got to worry about that matchup either, because Paul George is sending on self checks from long distance. So I don't know, man. I think it is. Again, granted, I spent like an hour trying to think about Wade because I still respect Paul George and the years he put in the Patriots uniform, right? But I couldn't think of a way that they could not lose, that they could get back into this series. They can't. I don't think they go back to L.A. They are going to go back to L.A., but I don't think the Dallas Mavericks go back to L.A. at all.
John, it's I need to add to a bigger mess here is Kawhi Leonard did this to himself on choosing how he wanted to go and who he wanted to bring in there. And it's been all utter failure. But they had more chaos this offseason. Kawhi could opt out. And then we're going to be dealing with free agency all over again.
That writing might be on the wall too, because wouldn't he already kind of sign his extension? Don't they know they gave Luke Kennard you sent that to me too. They gave Luke Kennard $64 million,
0 minutes.
You know what I'm saying? And I don't know, man. That's weird. The rotation that. That has put out there, they brought in an outside shooter, and even during midseason, you brought in DeMarcus Cousins to have a big, but you don't play him. They're not hurt, you know what I mean? And if you have any ankle thing right now, you get down 0-2, you shouldn't have it. We better shoot that up with something, man, because you better get out. We need you out there more than ever. So it's a wonder. You know what I'm saying? Why they made some of those deals that they did, even Yogi Ferrell, again, they don't play. He's not playing his guys like that. I guess there's a matter of trust that he doesn't necessarily have with them, maybe. But, again, Brandon, I thought about this for a whole hour. I don't think the Dallas Mavericks play another game against the Clippers in L.A.
Woo! I like it. I like it.
Y'all motherfuckers don't watch us play throughout the year, to tell you the truth. All right?
Just like Roy said, we don't watch them Clippers play all year. They're in trouble. They're in trouble. I've already played the bagpipes for them, so it's a wrap when the bagpipes come out, just like they did for the Pacers. But, yeah, John, Clippers down 0-2 going to Dallas for the next two games. They may sneak one in. They may sneak a game in here, game three or game four. But, I mean, it's going to have to be 40-40 from Paul and Kawhi. And then hope to God somebody from the bench can score some points, because they don't have that third player, that third scorer on that team. They really don't. So moving along, it's 6:37 right now here on the East Coast. That's not like a real radio host there. 6:37 on the East Coast. It's 81 degrees. We've got the Denver Nuggets, Portland Trailblazers, John. I said I love Portland in this series. They went out. Dame Dalla and them got game number one. Denver battled back with Jokic. I like the Jokic and Jokic matchup. The fact it's getting testy between these two, and I like it. I think Dame and them still get the wins. I think they get both of them here in Portland that are coming up, and then they wrap it with Denver. Probably, I can see it being five games, but it'll probably be six. I think Denver's going to go out with a little bit of a punch. But Dame Dalla, Portland, I like it.
Jokic, I noticed, man, ever since last year, he doesn't like being embarrassed by lesser players, especially lesser European players that, you know what I'm saying, he either came up with or played at some point, you know what I'm saying, during his youth. So game one, I think he registered. He had a good game scoring-wise, 30 or so, I do believe. And I think he had double-digit rebounds, but he had like one assist. And that team, that team without Jamal Murray depends upon him to be more than just a double-digit guy of rebounds and points. They do. They depend upon him to get guys open. You know what I mean? That changed in game two, even with Dame Dalla coming, you know what I mean, with the 40-point burger that he put up. Like, it really was like null and void. He didn't let Nurkic really go off, you know what I'm saying, while he was guarding him. Nor did he let Cantor. I think Cantor had less than 4 points. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So again, he takes up personal challenges with certain players. You know, sometimes like again when he meets the Anthony Davis of the world and the Giannis of the world, it's a different story. You know what I mean? But, man. So he kind of put the team on his back. They got great performances out of Michael Porter Jr. the other night. I think he had like 17 or so. I'm still waiting on the Aaron Gordon trade to pay off big dividends. I remember the Pacers had at one point had kind of flirted about trying to bring him in. I remember it was that summer that they were thinking about letting Bojan go and bringing in Aaron Gordon. Aaron Gordon kind of struggles with his offense. Great, great highlight guy. We know Dunker Supreme, you know what I mean, that type of player. But he kind of suffers without having the ball in his hand. Denver kind of doesn't necessarily put the ball in his hand one-on-one a whole lot. You know what I'm saying? But I'm still waiting for – he's played better than what they traded for. They traded Gary Harris out for him. He played better than Gary Harris. But they I think they were expecting a bigger, better impact from Aaron Gordon. I think that series kind of – I won't say seven, Brandon. I think it goes six. I still like the Portland Trailblazers to win out.
Okay. Okay. We're both in agreement on that one. I totally agree. Lakers, Suns, Phoenix got game one. Anthony Davis had a horrible game in game number one. And then you had Chris Paul who went down with an injury where, oh, my God, Chris Paul's season is completely over. His shoulder's completely ripped to coming back out and playing. So everybody calm the hell down on that. I thought that was a little overdramatic. So LeBron just being LeBron and acting like a little 125-pound Chris Paul can take him to the ground and hurt him and injure him. And it's just, gosh, being a LeBron James fan, I just see that. I just shake my head sometimes like, God, what are you doing? Like, stop
you know
acting
Chris
so much.
Pounds now.
I know he does. I'm not giving enough credit. He's probably like 150 soaking wet.
Man, he's right behind McFlurry, James Harden.
Oh!
Okay.
He does have a big ass. That's why he backs everybody down in the post. So, but yeah. So we got 1-1. Lakers won last night. Anthony Davis looked good. LeBron had 24 or 25, I think. Good role players scored for the Lake Show, and you knew they were going to get at least one in Phoenix. So 1-1. Next two games going to LA. I think LA. It's just a bad matchup for Phoenix in this series, unfortunately. I'd like to see them go further, but it's just a bad matchup.
It's a bad matchup. It won't be ended in five or anything like that. So we're talking about six games. The Lakers ultimately win out. They have the better players when they want to play. That's kind of how I looked at game one. You know what I'm saying? It was like you can say cobwebs or whatever. I'm sure that's what they kind of said, but they didn't put forth maximum effort. Neither LeBron James did nor Anthony Davis. Kyle Kuzma was somewhat of a shadow of himself when he kind of emerged as somebody a dependable fourth guy, fifth guy last year. But he's kind of, you know what I'm saying? Again, I think he'll kind of shake the cobweb off as when they return back to L.A. because he plays better. When they at home. So, there's not too much I can say. I be honest with you, Brandon, I watched maybe the first quarter and knew that the Lakers was going to win.
You were awake?
Right. I knew the Lakers was going to win. So I expect the Lakers to win the next two games at home.
Okay. Perfect. What else do I have on NBA? I think I've hit pretty much everything NBA. Kevin Pritchard, Pacers president, congratulations having a baby. I think this is his second or third marriage, I believe, because he has other kids. So, he has other kids. I know he has a daughter and a son for sure. But I think she looks like she's like 25. So, Kevin, you can tell spent more time recently, probably planning for the baby, painting the nursery than he was managing the Indiana Pacers team. So let's hope now that they've announced they're having a baby that he can put forth the effort for the Indiana Pacers. And we'll talk to Danny Bridges when he comes on about the Indiana Pacers, because I listened to Kevin Pritchard's press conference, and he didn't say he was getting rid of Nate Bjorkman, but he sure as hell didn't say that he wasn't staying. I don't know. And the fact Pritchard even finally said to himself, John, well, I'm being evaluated too. Well, it's about damn time that he's getting evaluated as well with this organization. So we'll talk to Danny. I'm sure Danny's going to have it. I'm going to press Danny with some stuff about KP, about him needing to be he needed to be held responsible. And where the Pacers go to as a franchise this offseason and more. So we're going to grill him a little bit. asking him. I would love if we could somehow get KP on the show. I know he won't. We've bashed him too much. At least I have. But I would be curious.
I've been a little bit more cordial on my Kevin Pritchard evaluation. He could probably say, using that as an excuse, that look, 70% of his guys were out that he kind of put together. Are they C-plus level guys? Yes. Jeremy Lamb, you know what I'm saying? TJ Warren was out for the whole season, whatever. The trade with Victor Oladipo, LeVert being out, even when he 20-some games when he first kind of came on or whatever. He could use that as an excuse. But then Brandon, the Brooklyn Nets had guys out too. Milwaukee had guys out too. Everybody had the Lakers
had people
that
out.
That big spin that they had, where they were riding third and kind of weathered the storm all the way to seven. Again, different pedigree of players, you know what I'm saying? Of course, but again, other teams had players out as well, and they kind of weathered the storm of between COVID and injury and everything else that kind of came with this NBA season. So again, you know, you can't necessarily use that as an excuse, but he could say that. He definitely could say that, and some people would kind of buy into it. I think ownership probably would buy into it.
Okay. We're going to do a quick ad read, John. When we come back, we'll chit-chat until we get our local legend, Danny Bridges, on with us here. So we'll be right back after these breaks.
You've changed thousands of diapers, cut off hundreds of crusts, played hours of peekaboo and duck, duck, goose because you'd do anything for your kids. That's why it's so important to protect them with life insurance from State Farm. State Farm Insurance Agent Scott K. Nichols will help make it easy and affordable to help protect your family no matter what the future holds. Because for the people you do anything for, life insurance could mean everything. Call State Farm Agent Scott K. Nichols in Indianapolis today at 317-243-3509. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Also, we want to thank our sponsor, Maverick Custom Motorsports, where ideas are created and dreams are born. Customizing most custom motorcycles, boats, slingshots, jeeps, and trucks. Offering pickups, deliveries, and shipping worldwide. Check them out today, maverickcustommotorsports.com. They also, John, do a greatness. They ship worldwide. They got custom motorcycle builds, custom audio accessory installs, LED lighting, custom wheels. They carry all the top brands and more. Check them out, 833-SHOP-MAV. That's 833-746-7628. Or www.maverickscustommotorsports.com today. All right, and we are back. We're going to have the amazing, the legend, the fast man himself, Danny Bridges, joining us here soon. John, Drew Timmy, we'll talk Drew Timmy real quick since we talk NBA. Drew Timmy is going back to Gonzaga next year. A little bit of a shock?
A little bit. He wasn't necessarily going to be a lottery pick, but a lot of scouts kind of have him in the first round. My scout and I see him as a Brad Miller, maybe Jeff Foster kind of type. I mean, that's not bad to have on your team. You need those kind of guys, but there's also that could be his ceiling and not necessarily where you want. But he's going back to prove his game. It'll be a different team we see in Gonzaga. They've got a bunch of three-star and four-star guys kind of coming out of high school to join what they have already kind of put together. Jalen Green won't be there. Corey Kispert won't be there. But I don't know. I think, hell, we know Gonzaga's going to win their league again, right?
Right.
But if they can make it to the Final Four, another magical ride to the Final Four, man, I would be mildly shocked. But you kind of need guys like Drew Timmy to help you make it there.
Okay, perfect, perfect. All right, John, without further ado, we have our guest, sports columnist, Indianapolis recorder, the fastest man in Indianapolis, or at least at the Speedway with Mario. Danny Bridges joins us. Danny, good to have you on again, buddy.
I can't believe you called me a guest. I'm flattered.
Hey, we rolled out the red carpet for you. Didn't you get the champagne and strawberries?
Yeah, a prime time slot on a on a beautiful Wednesday evening here in my neck of the woods. Just came in from outside before I fell asleep on the patio deck. And good to be with you. Good to be with anybody at my age, but certainly good to be with you too.
Great to have you. I had to put a great photo out of you on the advertisement because that's what hooks the people in, you know, seeing that picture.
Well, or it could be used for a scarecrow in a rural area, one of the two, right? But you know what? It's the best month of the year. It's the best time of the year. I've always been spoiled because I can roll the Indianapolis 500 activity around my birthday. And, you know, you hope to live another year to see another Indianapolis 500. But, hey, it's been stellar so far. I've had a blast, and I'm looking forward to Sunday. It looks like the weather is going to cooperate. It's not going to be stifling humidity or a heat. And I think it's going to be a good day. And I'm looking forward to joining the other 134,999 people who will be out there.
Yeah, absolutely. We need Indy 500 this weekend. A lot of big names in it, obviously, as always. Scott Dixon right now, probably the heavy favorite, at least on you know the sports books. Our polls that are sitting at plus 300. Looking based off of qualifying, and you were out there. I mean, you've been out there pretty much the whole month of May. How are you seeing this possible Indy 500 playing out in your head, well, kind of as we approach?
There are the clear-cut favorites, and I say favorites plural because there's a few other guys in addition to Scott Dixon. But I tend to look at things a little differently. I don't know if it's differently, but you know, a little bit more objectively. It's kind of easy to get caught up in speed, whether it's manufactured or artificial. By that, the latter of the two, meaning drafting and towing out there to where, hey, the guy was 228 miles an hour today. Well, he was drafting. He had a tow from other cars. But he ran consistently all day without a tow at 222, 223, which is what you're going to have to do on race day. And there's a handful of guys who have been very solid and steady in those numbers running without tows. Yet, you know, the unfortunate part of, and I hate to use the term pack racing, but the aerodynamics that go into this type of racing on a super speedway are pretty plain and simple. You know, you have to have either you're out front with speed and you're leading and everyone's chasing you, or you're within that four or five cars behind the leader and you're working off of each other for draft and tow and aerodynamic, you know, passing opportunities, for lack of a better term. But I do think I feel like there could be as many as 12 guys win this race on Sunday. Some people agree and disagree with that, but I really do think that we could see a dozen people have a chance to win the race.
Okay. Yeah, I've got about 9 guys. I think I did like tier 1, tier 2, and tier 3 is kind of how I broke them down.
Same here. Some guys who need lady luck to get to victory lane. Some guys who can fight it on their own as long as their car is balanced and they've got good pit stops. And then some guys who are in the right place at the right time on a yellow flag, a fuel mileage situation, what have you. So, but I certainly Dixon has to play in. I like Hunter Ray as also a guy. I mean, all the former winners have to be given the proper respect in their chances. Now, some of them have better opportunities than others. Some people will say now that Will Power has been slow and he's mired in the back row. I'm of the opinion that because he has ran steady throughout these last 2 weeks in practice by himself at race speeds in race setup, that he is a force to be reckoned with from the 32nd position. And I will be real surprised if he's not around when it counts at about lap 175, considering that just what he's capable of and what kind of equipment he has. I don't know why they were, you know, having troubles qualifying. I have to think it's aerodynamically. Ed Carpenter has a Chevy engine. Renus Vige had a Chevy engine. You know, they ran quick. So we'll see. But, hey, I think it kind of makes it a much better affair when you have numbers who can win rather than maybe a handful.
And looking at a couple names I like, look at the young guns, Colton Herta starting second. Does Herta or even Renus Vike, those two young guns, does either one of them you see have a real serious shot at winning this thing?
I think Herta does. Of those two, out of all the ones that you might call young guns, which is certainly you know, a good term for, you know, the five or six guys who are, you know, arriving on the scene and ready to take it over. I think Herta is one cool customer. I think he's mature beyond his years. He's just calm, and he's in a fast race car with a good team. And, you know, he lost the pole by a blink of an eye. So I certainly think he has a rock solid chance to be around at what I call, you know, closing time, lap 175, lap 180, when things get real. Okay. And I think that's the best part of that place. I mean, sure, the other laps count, but
right.
Give me that last 25 laps when everybody's had a pit stop, everybody's got fuel, nobody's got a tire issue, and you know, the green falls, and then they sort it out amongst themselves. But, I mean, sure, I mean, BK has an opportunity, but I think of all the younger guys, for lack of a better term, that Herta's chances are the best, and I would not be surprised if he wins Indianapolis 500 on Sunday and set his career up another notch. And then again, the Formula One talk will start again, and all these different things about his bright, bright future. Sure, he just signed an extension, but Michael Andretti is a businessman. He's also a former racer. I do believe if Colton Herta had a legitimate Formula One opportunity, not a backmarker team, but a legitimate opportunity with a team where he could be successful, Michael will let him out of his contract. Remember, Michael Andretti was bitten with the F1 bug just like his father, so he knows what it's like over there. It's still the international pinnacle, and I wouldn't be surprised to see Herta over there someday, but I'll be selfish and say I hope he runs IndyCar all of his life.
Okay. One I do like, and he's had some good runs the last couple of years, and even actually had good runs here at Texas. He's won at Texas previously. I like Graham Rahal. He's kind of one I'd keep an eye on. I like his odds right now at plus 1,800. He was there last year. He was in that fuel mileage game with Dixon, Sato, and himself there towards the end. But I kind of like Graham a little bit in a spot up there.
Certainly, he's a capable driver. He's on a team that has shown the ability to not only win races, but to win this race itself. It seems like there's always something that goes awry for him. Last year, he had a rough start, but climbed back up into the mix by, you know, the end of the race. So that would not be a surprise. That'd be a very popular winner as well, I think. You know, he's handsome, he's young, he's articulate. I hate guys like that, by the way. Seriously. He's everything that I'm not. But I would say this. He would be a very popular winner, and that's a piece missing from his resume. He's never won a driving title, but he's a capable man, and he's on a solid team. So, you know, they've shown the ability to win that race with Sato. His father won that race. It'll be 35 years, the 31st of May, this month, that his father won the Indianapolis 500 and won the series driving title that year, too, which is very difficult to pull off. Very few guys have won the Indy 500 and the points title in the same year. So that's certainly a pick to keep an eye on. And that's what's kind of fun like this. It's like a Kentucky Derby on steroids.
Yep.
Everybody's got their favorite. And I'm not comparing race cars to thoroughbred horses, but my analogy is that, you know, everyone's got their pick, everyone's got their odds. I think it's a lot harder in IndyCar to set odds than it would be in a horse racing field, but it's a lot of fun, and there are a lot of people who will gamble on the race this weekend. There's no question about it, whether it be a proposition bet, a parlay of some sort, who knows, but that's an interesting twist. That's something that's here. It's not going away, whether it be, you know, professional football, professional basketball, now even into auto racing. So a couple bucks on Graham Rahal would not be a bad bet.
Okay. That's one I have before I'll turn over to John. Danny, so far, explain, give to me last year, and you've been to several Indy 500s, more than I can probably count. But
50,
going
if you want to count, 50. Can you believe that?
Woo!
I started as a 10-year-old boy. My father took me to the 1969 race. But anyway, to your point, go ahead. I'm sorry.
So we've had all the fans, 350,000, whatever, jam-packed in this place. To last year, you went no fans. It was quiet, a little different, and it was moved to August. So this year, having the fans back, what kind of difference have you seen of a change that's made already just having the fans back there at the Speedway?
Well, it's interesting. The two things. One, track's done a heck of a job in making things as safe as possible. I wrote a piece about IMS has a template. Follow it and you'll go home safely. By that meaning, keep your mask on unless you're eating or drinking. You know, social distance yourself. I mean, if you go with people that are vaccinated and they're in your family or what have you, or your group of friends, that's a little bit different in terms of the risk. But, you know, if everybody will be smart come Sunday, then I think all the eyes that are on this race for two reasons. One, the annual reason, the race itself, and two, because this will be the largest gathering of people post the height of coronavirus at a sporting right. event, even though it's outside. I think everybody can make it happen. But to your point about what's different, I mean, you know, the smells from the concession stand, the noise of people milling around, people screaming at their favorite driver when he goes by, all that stuff that happens, you know, historically is back. Drivers have said in many cases, in many different interviews, both radio, print, and TV, that they're happy about it. They enjoy seeing people in the stands. And let's face it, fans purchase tickets. Fans purchase merchandise. They purchase concessions. They purchase parking. They're a financial viable part of what goes on out there. And, you know, everybody thinks that, hey, Roger Penske's a billionaire or a multi-billionaire. Okay, fine. Sure he is. But they need that revenue stream to be reinstated. And I do believe next year will be the first year that everything's back to normal. But, you know, 135,000 is more than I thought they were going to have if you'd have asked me that question in January or February of this year. So I think people generally are happy to see it. You know, I enjoy seeing young people out there. I mean, really young people, you know, kids 6, 8, 10 years old with their parents, you know, wearing a T-shirt or a hat of a driver that they're following. And, you know, it's just it's a much better vibe when the people are there for all the reasons in addition to the obvious ones.
Okay. Okay. John?
Danny, all my NASCAR buddies was wanting Will Power not to make it. I don't know why. They was rooting for him not to make it. But they also, most of my NASCAR friends don't really like Indy racing. Can you put into words, like, what separates this type of racing from any other racing?
Well, I've always wondered why people couldn't enjoy all disciplines of motorsports, but certainly if you have a favorite series or a favorite driver, that's great. I mean, that's what, you know, makes things interesting, I think. I mean, the Indy cars weigh half as much as a stock car. You can't bump or touch in an Indy car or somebody's going to go airborne. The
right.
speed factor, the differentials in straight line and average speeds are, you know, noticeable. There are people who would prefer the restrictor plate racing at Daytona and Talladega over an IndyCar race on an oval, specifically the Indianapolis Motor Speedway or Texas Motor Speedway or Gateway, which are the only levels left on the schedule. I've never really understood why people, though, can't enjoy all of them, but the major differences are the ones I've mentioned. I just think wheel-to-wheel, both series are fun to watch. I'd much rather watch a stock car on a road course than I would a super speedway, but there is something exhilarating about 40 stock cars running bumper to bumper, actually touching each other at upwards of 190 miles an hour. So I wonder for those who just want to see the big pileups, if that's the attraction, but mm-hmm. make no mistake about it. There have been great drivers who've ran both series, not as much as it was back, say, you know, in the older days, but I still enjoy both. I prefer NASCAR on the road course myself. And I still say the Xfinity race at Indianapolis last year on the road course was one of the best races I've ever seen at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway road course. So for what it's worth,
okay.
I think those are the major differences, but I enjoy them right. both. But you know what? I'll watch motorsports reruns, whatever you want to call it, knowing who won the race just to see if I missed something the first time. So I'm a junkie. I'm the guy they don't need to worry about. It's the younger generation or demographic. The 18 to 30 demographic right now is so engaged with so many different things, and they have so many entertainment options. It's hard to harness their attention on a race that might last 2.5 to 3 hours. It really is. And it's interesting. That's changed how the Nielsen ratings work as well. This weekend on the Indianapolis 500 broadcast, somebody will look on their phone for 2, maybe 3 minutes about what's going on, okay? You know, updates, mm-hmm. you know, streaming live, this, that, whatever. They count that as a view. Now, to me, I think you have to be watching something. But the bottom line is, to your point, those are the major differences as far as the speed, the weights of the cars, the aerodynamics, and what have you. But I think both series have a lot of great things to offer, and I enjoy both those disciplines every year. In fact, I'll look forward to the stock cars coming back out here in August because, you know, they're going to tackle that road course. And for what it's worth, you know, that was the best race at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway road course last year, bar none.
Yeah. Well, Danny, what was your thoughts, speaking of NASCAR and road racing, thoughts on the Circuit of Americas they just had in Austin?
Wow.
Track. What was your thoughts from that this past weekend? Because it looked good, but then there was some issue.
Yeah, I don't see how you can run a stock car in the rain. I just don't understand those who feel that you can do that with any resemblance of competition and safety. And that's a tough balance, especially in the rain, to start talking about competition and safety both. You know, tires are different, weight distribution. You know, Kevin Harvick is as good as anyone who's ever put the gloves on. I mean, you know, there are drivers who've accomplished more, but, you know, he's a Hall of Famer. He's won, if I'm not mistaken, 55 or 60 career races. He's won a Daytona. I mean, he's won a points title. He is someone that you can listen to with respect when he speaks. And he talked about how crazy it was and the collision that he was in because they just couldn't see. And that's when you have to call something. And they went too long. The fact that they were running with windshield wipers, that's interesting to me. I knew they had them. I was hoping they wouldn't need them. But I thought that was a debacle, and that's a shame because that's a world-class racetrack. That facility is as nice as you will find in the United States, Northern America, for that, or North America. And it's kind of a bummer that IndyCar is no longer there. But I tell you what, that's NASCAR country now because that place was – they had a huge crowd even in the rain. And they're going to be back there, and hopefully next year they'll get, you know, clear skies, 70, and no humidity because it was a mess. And I thought it was embarrassing for NASCAR as a sanctioning body and a disappointment for the fans that had to be who put their hard-earned money out and had to sit through what they called a race before it was even called.
Yep. Okay. John?
Before you came on, Danny, Brandon kind of alluded to, I don't know if it's jealousy or not, it might be professional jealousy. You took a picture recently with Mario Andretti.
That was a birthday celebration. I turned 62 this past May 23rd, this past Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Hope to be 63 when we talk again next year. Who knows? But it'd be good to be around.
Well,
it's good to be alive.
We'll bring you all before that.
But the point is, that Indy Racing experience, which is owned and operated by Scott Jasek and Joe Kennedy, is one of the most exhilarating things you can ever do. Mario is their staple lead driver. There's other guys who drive for them. Some of them have competed in the Indianapolis 500. In fact, yesterday, Spencer Pigot was there. Gabby Chavez was there, and Kyle Kaiser was also there. Because they ran probably, close to maybe 100 people through there yesterday. And the basic premise is it's a two-seater, as you've seen before. It's a longer version of the current IndyCar, so a passenger can ride behind the driver. So I was able to twist a few arms to make sure that my ride was with Mario, who has been good to me and given me his professional time for questions and answers about IndyCar and other disciplines of racing. I owe him tremendously for that. And I turned 3 laps with him around the Indianapolis Motor Speedway yesterday, and it was exhilarating. He said we were right at 195 on the backstretch. It felt it was a lot faster to me. I mean, it blew me away, the G-forces and the turns. But it's just another day at the park for this guy. He didn't even break a sweat, and he continued to run people out there one after the other, and very generous with his time afterwards, taking pictures with everybody, signing things. He is, without question, the greatest ambassador I feel IndyCar still has. Now, you could say, wait a minute, this guy's in his 80s. What about the guys who are running today? And, you know, what about, you know, I get all that. But this two-seater program and the visibility it has raised for IndyCar racing is really kind of under the radar. People don't realize it. Do you recall when he took Lady Gaga on a ride at the race before the race 2 years ago? That got 2.6 million hits on YouTube. Now, granted, Lady Gaga is going to get attention, but Mario Andretti, arguably the greatest ever and certainly the most versatile race driver ever, with Lady Gaga in tow, driving around the Indianapolis Motor Speedway in front of the pace car on the pace lap. Now, unfortunately, I've got some bad news about the two-seater. They are not going to allow the two-seater to pace in front of the pace car on the ceremonial parade lap as they have every other race historically annually. So I think Mario personally is upset about that. I'm not speaking for him, but I don't know who made that decision. But I think if they weren't going to let Mario drive the two-seater in front of the pace car as they have been, you know, the last few years, put him in the pace car. With all due respect to Danica Patrick, who will be a very capable and a very popular pace car driver, put Mario in there, because that's something he's never done, and that's a bucket list checkoff for him as well. And it's just unfortunate that those kinds of things didn't come together this year. But I was on cloud nine yesterday, and gotcha. When I was a kid, I actually, after watching the first Indianapolis 500 I attended, he won that race. I went home and 2 days later went to a rural Indiana, Greenwood, Indiana, a rural community, to a little hardware store and got a can of spray paint that what I felt matched his car and painted my bicycle with it, much to my mother's chagrin. And there was an old elementary – the story gets better. There was an old elementary school near my house where I attended 1 through 5 grades. And it had a cul-de-sac. So I would go up there and just drive around in circles and pretend I was Mario Andretti. My friends would come around and they would ride their bikes too. But I wanted to be Mario Andretti when I grew up, and I still want to be Mario Andretti if I ever grow up. Because to me, he's just bigger than life, and I've always been a huge fan. And I think he does things the right way. His heartache in Indianapolis at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway is well documented, but the bottom line is, wouldn't it be cool? And it's a long shot, but wouldn't it be cool if there was an Andretti family reunion in Victory Lane this Sunday afternoon with Marco? Oh. That would be full circle for that family. Michael's never going to get another opportunity. He's retired, but a wildly successful owner, won the race numerous times as an owner. How about Marco pulling into Victory Lane on a one-off? And that would make it full circle for that family. I really do think that would put a bow on their legacy at that racetrack.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. That'd be awesome to see. I've met Mario several times being in the hospitality business. He was staying where he stayed before for the month where I was previously working at. So seeing him, and he was always smiling, talking with you, very open. And just the reactions he gets out there on race day. He turns on the lights and sirens of the police motorcycle, and he gets a big kick out of every time. So very cool. It's on my bucket list to do the two-seater myself. I have it on my list.
Well, you can do it with Mario. You have to make an arrangement in advance to get a specific driver, but I can tell you about that off air sometimes. But one quick thing about Mario as well is that he's so congenial. He is so accommodating. There was a lady at the two-seater program yesterday who became stricken with anxiety before it became her turn to get in the car. She was having second thoughts about it, and she actually almost fainted.
Oh, wow.
So they took her. They have paramedics out there in the first aid station, so in case there's a problem of any nature. So they took her back there. And they gave her some water. I don't know the extent of things. I don't know if they administered any other kind of fluids, but they got her calm. They got her to where she could stand up and rejoin her family. They probably refunded the lady's money, and they let her, and she was going home. I was walking by when she came out of that first aid area. Mario was informed that she had, unfortunately, literally fainted because of anxiety and nervousness. He spent some time talking with her, asked her if she was okay. They did a selfie, and at least she got a picture and a memory of that day, other than, you know, having some, you know, some nervousness or anxiety. But I thought that was really cool, because when he found out that that was what had happened, he went right over there and checked on her, to her, and kind of salvaged her day a little bit. Now, if that's not class personified, I don't know what is. But you can make an appointment or a reservation to ride with Mario at any track on the IndyCar circuit. He usually attends it unless he's got a conflict of schedule issue. But I know he'll do as many races as he can, and he's having a blast. I mean, at age 82, he's going 195 miles an hour with his hair on fire.
Crazy.
I don't get it, but I sure am glad that I got it.
And I remember once, wasn't there like a crash with a two-seater? Like a while ago, like, I don't know, was it about 8, 9, 10 years ago, if I remember right?
I don't recall. I know they've had some mechanical failures before that were probably embarrassing to them, but I don't know they've ever had a serious incident. But I will tell you, it is professionally ran. A lot of the guys that are involved with this program have worked on the IndyCar teams. They can come in and change a set of tires and fuel that thing quickly. They take their time, and they're methodic about it, of course, because they're not in a race. They're in the entertainment business. But, they maintain transporter trailers. They have, I think, 4 or 5 of those cars. They can churn out a couple hundred rides a day pretty quickly. It's a great corporate team building thing. It's a great thing to give a gift to somebody for a birthday or a Christmas. I know that they also are very benevolent. They donate rides to not-for-profits all the time. It's just a win-win. I mean, you know, you get the chance to a simulated version of an IndyCar, and for 3 laps you can pretend in your mind you are whoever's driving, and I sure as the heck did that yesterday for about, I don't know, however long it takes to turn 3 laps at 195 miles an hour. I thought I was Mario Andretti, and I'll cherish that moment, you know, for however long I've got left on this earth.
That's awesome. That is very cool. Last thing I have, and we're going from the greatness and the happiness to the world of despair. Danny, what I told with John, I said, I had to ask this, because with all the Facebook and thing, what in the hell or what in the world does our Indiana Pacers have to do this offseason? And is anybody both from Pritchard accountable for where we've gotten?
Well, those are really good questions. I think here's my estimation of what I think needs to happen, and then I guess we can all wager on what will happen. Larry Bird was a phenomenal basketball player, one of the greatest ever. There's no argument about that. He had success as a coach because he was smart enough to surround himself with great assistant coaches. And to his credit, he gave them a lot of the glory. So he was a Hall of Fame basketball player. He was a coach of the year in the NBA. And one season, I'm not mistaken, he was also named the executive of the year when he was general manager. Larry Bird's resume speaks powerfully. But the latter of those three, as far as the general manager thing, there were definitely some holes in that resume. Now, I'll get to the point here. Kevin Pritchard is Larry Bird's guy. Okay. People can say, hey, what are you talking about? Dan Bird's no longer on the payroll. I'm not sure if that's true or not, but even if he's not, he is a constant ally of the Simon family and Kevin Pritchard. Now, I think it's past due time to cut the Bird ties. And that would mean also letting Kevin Pritchard go. I think he's a guy who shouldn't be back next season. You know, here we are in I am maybe almost the 1st of June calling for a new general manager for a season that will begin the 1st of October, but there are some guys out there. My point is this, you know, who's holding him accountable? The Simon family have been good stewards of the franchise for decades, but the Simon family also is enamored with Larry Bird. I do believe if Bird was a young man and an orphan, that they would adopt him. They love him that much. Now, you can say that's a stretch. Fine. That's just my personal opinion. The point is, because that's Bird's guy, I think they are hesitant to remove him from his job. I would even be surprised if they might even get Bird involved with that if they end up going that direction by meaning, hey, we'd like for you to talk to Kevin. I'm not saying the Simons can't run the franchise. Of course they can. Every owner can, but how well they can do it is the question. I do believe that this coach deserves the term of his contract. He certainly deserves a chance to come back. All the injuries they've had, it's wasn't even a litmus test is what this guy could do, and he still won, 34 games, I think? So, you know, the jury is still out on Nate, but we saw how the Pacers treat coaches and the debacle they had with Nate McMillan. We know historically they're cheap when it comes to paying coaches. So there's a lot of unanswered questions. If I had my druthers and I was in charge, I would I don't know if I would clean house totally, but Kevin Pritchard would be given whatever the term is on his contract and released. I would bring Nate back, and they're going to have to make a trade for a point guard. I don't know what the key piece in that is. It's probably going to be Miles Turner, but will they pull that trigger in the offseason? I'm not so sure that Pritchard isn't of the opinion, hey, if we're healthy, we're competitive. Well, what does competitive mean in the NBA today? Does that mean the 4th or 5th seed in the conference? Does it mean if we don't have any injuries, we might have a chance to win 50 ball games? That might be a stretch, but there's a lot going on there. And the press conference that Pritchard had on Zoom was not an endorsement of the coach. And he's our coach for now is what he basically said. Boy, there's a ringing endorsement. I hope Nate is renting rather than buying a home here locally, but that ship's man. Probably sailed. He probably did buy a house, but it was disappointing. It had to be disappointing for Pacer fans. And these next 60 days are really critical for this franchise as to, are they going to make a coaching change? And if they are, have they learned the hard way that if you want a good coach, you have to pay them well and you have to give them the opportunity to run the show? And we don't know how good a coach we've got, but I do believe he deserves another year at the very least.
Okay.
Interesting.
John?
Interesting. Danny, before we let you go, man, is some guy's pizza sitting people yet? Are they having?
I love that place. They're about 15 blocks from my residence, and they are seating individuals. I haven't been in there other than carry out, so I'm assuming they've probably taken a few tables out to give it, you know, more of the social distance. But they've been very vigilant on mask and carry out since the pandemic, you know, started. So yeah, as of the 18th of this month, they are seating people. Their lasagna special is epic. It's the first weekend of every month. How would I know that, right? Sitting here dreaming about it. But their pizzas are fantastic. They have a pretty good salad as well.
Absolutely.
You can get wine and beer in there. This is like a commercial for them, isn't it? But, yeah,
I've been there before. I've seen some of your check-ins, and I've been on some guys.
It's a good place. It's a good place to sign the feedback on.
Yeah, I've been on some guys like over 10 years or so. We just got to get Brandon one day to come. We got to get Brandon one day to come to the east side, and we'll all pile up there.
I'll tell you what, I'll meet you guys down there. I'll pick up the first check, but we're going to have to keep it under $100, okay?
No problem.
That includes drinks, food, what have you. If we go over $100, you guys are liable for your own charges. If you keep it under $100, which you can do there real easily, you can count on me to pick up the tab the first time. Listen, I've had fun. It's good to hear your voices. I do tune in from time to time. I will remind your listeners that yours truly can be heard every Thursday at 2:30 on the Community Connection with Tina Cosley. We talk sports. This particular Thursday or tomorrow at 2:30. Tina is on a hiatus. She took a few well-deserved days off. And Osea Boyd, who I know is one of your favorites, Jonathan, is going to be the guest behind the microphone. So tune in, and she and I are going to chop up a little Indy 500 too.
Sweet.
Beautiful. Danny, thank you, my man, for coming on again. And we won't wait as long next time to get you on.
Well, I appreciate it. The check that you guys give me to come on is always appreciated.
It's still a fail.
I can't believe the amount of money you pay me, considering I'm a ham and egger, but I really do appreciate it. And last but not least, if you're not going to the 500 this weekend in person, I do think there's a good chance they're going to lift the blackout. As of yesterday at 10 a.m., they had 1,800 seats that had not been sold. That's not a lot. Will they lift the blackout if they come close? Or obviously, though, I think they'll do it if they sell out. But I think it'd be a major public relations boon for them to let the race be seen locally. And I also think it could be a very difficult public relations situation for them if they come close to selling the race out and don't air it locally. A lot of people will tune in if they get the opportunity. These are hard times yet for still some people who can't afford to buy a ticket. And
right.
Why not let them enjoy the race one more year, and then next year we're back to business. So there's a tidbit as we close.
Perfect. Sounds good. Thanks, Danny. Have fun this weekend.
Okay, take care, guys. Okay, you too. Thanks.
All right, that's Danny Bridges, Indianapolis Recorder, sports columnist. Great, great segment. We've talked Indy 500, so you got your preview for the weekend. We talked Pacers and what possibly needs to happen or what's going to look forward, John. Great, great, great. Always good insight from Danny.
Always, always.
Okay, John, moving on. I don't have very much on my my segment here, which is good. We've got about 30 minutes left in the show. We did have somebody call in as soon as we had Danny on. They called in from Minnesota, but they are no longer on here. So I don't know who we were having. Okay. We made somebody mad up there. I don't know if it's Vikings or Timberwolves or who, but
it's probably Coach Flex.
Hey, roll that boat. John, Julio Jones apparently wants out of Atlanta. Shannon Sharp kind of did the wool over the eyes and made a phone call on live television. And I don't know if Julio actually knew that he was on the air. He wants out of Atlanta. He's done, and I don't want to go to Dallas. But what were your thoughts on that? That was kind of a BS move done by Shannon.
I believe he knew he was on live air.
You do?
It might be their way of getting him out. Atlanta, why wouldn't Atlanta – you think about it, Brandon. Why wouldn't Atlanta trade him on draft night when, you know what I'm saying, where you can get – you know what I mean? Now where are we going? You know, I know you put out a list of teams on the Facebook page of where he might – destination places where he might be at, but, like, everybody kind of spent their draft capital, haven't they? Kind of, sort of. Well, at least this year's and maybe even next year's. I know the Colts kind of are somewhere in the middle of the pack because they need a wide out. I don't know if we necessarily have enough draft capital to get Julio Jones. The Colts don't. There was – I think – who else is on there? New England.
Chargers.
The Chargers. I don't think it'd be Green Bay or New England. When you think about it could be a Chargers.
Tennessee.
I could see Tennessee. I could see the only championship level team I really could see that kind of flirts with the playoff would be the 49ers, and especially with his history. Excuse me, with the relationship that he has with the coaching staff that used to be the coaching staff in Atlanta. But I really don't foresee him going to, you know what I'm saying, Green Bay to make Aaron Rodgers happy. That's enough of a mess right there anyway. You know what I'm saying, that they have going on between the general manager and Aaron Rodgers. Bill Belichick spent all his money on tight ends and defensive backs during the offseason. And if he wanted a wideout of Julio Jones caliber, I'm pretty sure that he probably would have drafted one in the second, third round. You know what I'm saying? So I don't foresee that. Julio Jones might be having to deal with somebody who's a developing team, Carolina Panthers, you know what I'm saying, or even – I won't say the Chargers are losing. If they were to get Julio Jones, it would be a different look, you know what I mean? It would be obviously an upgrade for Justin Herbert offensively, you know what I'm saying, to have a Hall of Fame caliber player, to throw to. But again, that team still going to go through a bunch of growing pains and learning lumps as they try to make the playoffs. So I don't know. I wish Julio the best.
I think you've got to go somewhere where the quarterback is not making much money. That way that extra $14, $15 million can go to Julio's contract. So I think it's got to be a younger quarterback. I do. I think a Mac Jones fits perfectly, especially with the salary cap that the Patriots still have. I think it fits out in the San Diego with a young Justin Herbert who hasn't had his max deal yet. He's still in that rookie contract where the Chargers can absorb that money. I think it's this younger team that's got that opportunity. Miami with Tua in them, I think they can definitely take him in there. But, yeah, you're Matt Ryan. You're like, Julio wants out now.
Yeah, I don't think Atlanta kind of thought this out at all. And like I said, it sounds like it's basically like a cost-cutting move anyway. It's not necessarily that they're unhappy with his production. And I know he's often injured and whatnot, but I think it's basically got a cost-cutting move. They want to go, but again, if that's the quarterback's safety blanket. They kind of grown together, and you're saying I get it. They got the new guy, the new kid on the block, right? Kid from Florida, you know what I'm saying, who can play tight end or even put a little small forward or even a little wide out, right? But again, there's still going to be some learning, some growing pains with him coming into the league. So, Brandon, we said it. I thought it before even the draft even started. I thought before the Hawks, the Falcons should have took a quarterback and not a tight end. But here they are. So it doesn't necessarily surprise me that they pissed off one of their all-time great players.
Okay. Looking at the other side, we just talked about Aaron Rodgers, talked with SportsCenter, said it wasn't about the players, it's Jordan Love. I like Jordan Love. I like that kid. But it was more of a philosophy than anything, Aaron Rodgers said. Are we buying it? Because Kenny Mayne pretty much flat out said, and that was an opportunity for him to say, hey, I want to stay in Green Bay. He didn't say it.
Right. It's not like he can't be traded, right? There's nobody outside of Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Kansas City Chiefs and maybe even Pittsburgh Steelers, right? There's nobody that wouldn't trade for Aaron Rodgers. You know what I mean?
I think he stays now. He felt disrespected, and he felt like it hurt him. So what he's doing now is he's grudging, and he's just making it twist and turn and feel uncomfortable in Green Bay. And he's not only doing it once, he's doing it twice. He's staying quiet, and then he's twisting and turning. And then you know what? He's going to say, all right, guys, you know what? Now you see how I felt, and then I think it's going to come back together. I really do.
He can't be this glib, man. You were in – how many times have you been MVP in Green Bay? At least twice? You know what I'm saying?
I said he's overrated. You know I said that.
In the last three seasons, well, you said because he's only went to one Super Bowl and it's been like 10 years. And I get that. I get that too. But it also could be, you know what I'm saying? I think he's egotistical. I think he's a great player, but I also think he's got an egotistical chip on his shoulder. That he, you know what I'm saying, that he wants to do it his way. And it's just the philosophy, blah, blah, blah. But, like, dude, they were still 13-3. So, like, how can you say philosophy? How can you say it'd be different if you took a step back and y'all went 10-6 and y'all didn't make the playoffs? Or, you know what I'm saying? Again, answer Kenny Mayne. They need to get some – I mean, God bless him. I know he just got sent off, a great send-off from SportsCenter. They need to put Aaron Rodgers in front of us and be like, dude, what happened here? Because I get – you can say Jordan Love. You can say Matt LaFleur. You can say the front office. You had it right here. You ain't, you know what I'm saying? He's not a stationary quarterback.
Right.
Why didn't you run for it? That's what I would ask. Why didn't you run for it? Because if you ran for it, there's a different way we look at history right now, and you're playing the Chiefs in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, absolutely. Bring him on the Crossroads show or even McAfee's show. Pat has him on all the time. Like, how he hasn't said anything on there about it. It's just, like I said, I think it's
methodical, and I think he has a method as to why he's doing it, and he's just twisting to make him feel uncomfortable, and then he's going to come back and say, all right, now that's done. Let's get to business. I think that's exactly how this is playing out now. I really do. I would be shocked.
He's trying to So you're saying he's trying to out-diva Brett Favre when Brett Favre got on the airplane and SportsCenter was following him? I can't remember.
Oh, yeah. Favre walked.
Green Bay sent an airplane down to Mississippi. Even Mississippi got an airport. I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
Hattiesburg. Shots to the Mississippi residents that were listening to the show.
They're calling next week. Go ahead, Brandon.
PGA, Phil Mickelson wins PGA Championship at 50 years old. Oldest male now to win the major. Phil looked great this weekend. Brooks Koepka just didn't have it there against him. But I did love the rivalry in golf that's starting to continue to brew with Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka, and the disdain on Brooks' face when he says, you just got to line the ball up better. And Brooks, you can tell Brooks just can't stand him. He says, shit. It's one of those live-to-tape interviews. I loved it. I think it's great for golf. They're actually chirping each other now still on Twitter because it was announced today that it's Bryson and Aaron Rodgers, two people you can love to hate, against Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady in the match. The quote-unquote match will be going on here in June. Brady's already put out some memes making fun of Rodgers and stuff. And then Brooks Koepka put on Twitter at Aaron Rodgers, good luck. And then Bryson just responded an hour ago, says back to Brooks Koepka and said, glad to know I can live in your head rent-free. So this rivalry, I love it. I hope they get paired together next month for the U.S. Open. They need to get paired together.
God.
Great.
They won't never. I don't know if that's going to happen, Brad. I always see golf as a gentleman's game. There's not a whole lot of smack talk, especially with social media. So this is a little new for me to kind of experience, man. You know, I kind of like the fieriness. So long doesn't reach Kwame Brown, Steven Jackson levels of disrespect. that kind of dominated the airwaves the last two weeks over on YouTube and Steven Jackson and Matt Barnes' podcast. But no, man, it's good because it puts more eyes in the air. People like drama. People like when, you know what I'm saying, other guys don't necessarily like one another. It's not all friendly. It's a friendly game of golf. You know what I mean? So, yeah. But you know what, Brandon? They got to win, though. They got to win. You know what I'm saying? They can't let the 50-year-old Phil Mickelson come in and, you know what I'm saying, and win it in dramatic fashion. So, you know, if they're going to have this chirping back and forth, they got to win.
Yep. Adam Vinatieri did not retire, and now he officially is, I guess, retiring. I thought he was already retired when he got cut.
Man, he retired. He retired when he missed that third field goal or extra point for the Colts, and then they blamed Jacoby Brissett, man. Don't get me started. But I guess he made it official. I guess he probably thought in the back of his mind that another team would pick him up, and not even the great Bill Belichick seen any value in bringing him back to Foxborough. So as much as we can, you know what I'm saying, remember Adams last year, here with the Colts that of luster. He's still one of the greatest football players, even as a kicker. You know what I mean? He's one of the greatest football players, a clutch. You know what I'm saying? You remember the titles he won with the Patriots, and you remember, you know, his role replacing Vander Jack or Vander Choke when he came to Indy. And him becoming, you know what I'm saying, a dependable guy. It's just kind of sad that he kind of flamed out in the last few seasons. So, but like, nah, man, he'll go into, you know what I'm saying, he's got the yellow jacket already pressed and signed, sealed, delivered, ironed out, whatnot, whatever. So, depending upon what he wants to go in as, a Colt or a Patriot, that'll be interesting to see. But kudos to him for finally making it, official.
Absolutely. John, I got my movie/ recommendation. You've probably already watched it, knowing how great you are at watching these type of things. I am actually just now, and I had to stop it because I'm halfway through. But I'm halfway through right now, Army of the Dead on Netflix with Dave Bautista in it. Have you watched it yet?
I have not. I've read a lot of reviews about it. It's a Zack Snyder movie. You know what I'm saying? Anybody remembers Zack Snyder? He did Dawn of the Dead almost like 15 years ago. He's also done a couple other movies here recently, like Justice League, the Snyderverse, that's him. The Snyder Cut, that's him. I've read positive reviews about it. I know it goes a little weird.
it does.
Like things of, the kind of things we know about zombies or whatever. But it is on my viewers. It's on my viewers list to watch. So, yeah, I'm glad you called that out.
So far, not too bad. I'm halfway through. It does kind of it reminds me a little bit of I Am Legend. I think that has Will Smith in it.
Yep.
How the zombies there in that, I won't ruin it too much, but the zombies there in that and how it kind of plays into your regular type of zombies. So, but yeah, so far it's not too bad. I like the idea of what they're doing, the storyline plot of it. When you got Dave Bautista, so, I mean, can't go wrong. By the way, shout out my guy, Kyle Wells, buddy of mine, big wrestling guy. He said, I don't know what he's done to piss off, but Dave Bautista's blocked him on Twitter. I don't know what.
Wow.
What's going on? But he had Dave, and that goes to show, John, there's probably some sports people or whoever got you blocked. If you go through and try to tweet them and you find out you're blocked, you're shocked. He's got Dave Bautista. I've got Jamil Hill. She's blocked me. Her and Josina Anderson. I don't know what I did to Josina Anderson, but I'm blocked from her.
Man, you know me. I'm trying to get on Whitlock's block list, but I can't get on that block.
I don't know what I did to Josina Anderson, but I am on her block list. She hasn't blocked Crossroads, but she's definitely blocked my personal account. So I don't know what the hell I did there.
I'll send some flyers to ESPN and see what happens.
I should probably block you then. What else you got, John? We got about 18 minutes.
Oh, I don't really have a whole lot, man. I know we didn't necessarily deep dive into Major League Baseball. It's kind of hard even midseason to deep dive in that. When I look at the standings, I'm glad all the Cubs fans have stopped whining. They're second right now in the division with the game. Like I think they are a game and a half out, something like that. So they are playing better. They're not going to finish last. You know what I'm saying? So that's good to report. But Brandon, when I look at the National League West, like, dude, uh-oh. I don't know what they got out there cooking out West, man. But between San Diego, the Dodgers, and San Francisco, man, I think that's some of the best baseball that's kind of happening right now. All those teams are plus 500, like they're above 500, and like unless they're playing one another, they're just killing it. You know what I'm saying? Outside of that, man, I really don't have a whole too much left. I don't even want to talk about the Reds. The Reds are Jekyll and Hyde. Okay.
Yeah,
I know. So, but no. Outside of that, man, I don't have too much, man. I need to catch up on my wrestling. I did watch a little bit the Ultimate Warrior, Dark Side of the Ring, or whatever.
I haven't watched that yet, but I didn't like what I saw. I don't know. It's one thing when somebody's dead and they don't have a chance to talk themselves on something like that.
Right.
But I've yet to see. I saw experts. I haven't watched it, but Dana Warrior said it was smut and something. But I know the people that put these documentaries together for that, they do an excellent job and they do their research. So I'm excited to watch this thing. The part I saw was about his wife and she couldn't find him, and then she called the hotel room and he was cheating on her. And then he found a book and all that. So
yeah, he got a date book, right? It's curriculum. What I do know, what I do remember about the Ultimate Warrior, man, a lot. Was thrust upon him, like, to be the next Hulk Hogan and to basically kind of carry the company. He not only was the next Hulk Hogan, like, think about Hulk Hogan supporting Cass. I know you were younger, but think about Hulk Hogan supporting Cass when he was running with the title. He had Macho Man Randy Savage as the foil. He had Ricky Steamboat as the undercard. He had a bunch of other guys, you know what I'm saying, as undercard. And then Ultimate Warrior, boom, bam. Okay, here's Sergeant Slaughter. Here's your main nemesis. Or here's Andre the Giant, who's like 100 years old. Here's your main nemesis. So, you know, if we got a caller, I can talk about Ultimate Warrior all the time, but if we got a caller, it's taken.
Yeah, okay. We've got the third best. We got the number three caller in Crossroads history, Reggie Sykes, calling in. What's going on, Reg?
Hey, man, I don't appreciate you, man. First, you cheat me in golf yesterday. Now you're moving me down to number three. I mean, you know, I'm number one. First
did you get two in golf? You got cheated in golf?
Yeah, how'd you get cheated?
Man, he jinxed me. He talked a lot of trash. Took me off my game, man.
It was the pace of play that was
with him, man.
It was the pace of play. Me and you did all right.
You didn't do me right, man. You treated me bad, man. I just want you to know that, man. and you know, anytime you don't let Daryl Cott be ahead of me, well, your ratings are going to suffer because people tune in not only to listen to but to listen to my commentary, talk about King James flopping and all that other New England mess and, you know, the good news about the Pacers and good news about the Colts. So, yeah.
Well, we need some good news about the Pacers. We really do.
Yeah.
I'm wondering what they're going to do. I don't know what they're going to do. We know they got to trade somebody. We know they got to get a point guard. We know they got to get some people that can guard people. I mean, there's only so much you can do. Just because you want to make trades doesn't mean another team want to trade with you.
Right.
You know? And I think they're truly going to trade Miles, but I think you can get more value out of trading Sabonis right now. I truly do, because his value is very, very high right now, you know? And I just think that would be the best way to go.
Red. Sabonis is putting up Dave Collins-like numbers.
Yes,
you gonna let that walk up out of here?
I tweeted this out
about a week ago. I say we do Miles a favor, okay? Because we don't want to do it like Danny Granger and send him to Philadelphia and then Danny Granger whines because somebody place that was tanking. I say we send Miles to one of the two Texas teams, either San Antonio, which could use a guy like Miles, and find a better way to, you know what I'm saying, better way to manage his minutes, better way to help him rebound, whatever, make him a better player, you know what I'm saying? Or we send him to Houston, which I know, you know what I'm saying, Houston is in rebuild mode, but they have three first-rounders. They don't, you know, outside the lottery picks, I mean, we could stand to use to get a little bit younger and a little bit more elite at different positions.
I can understand exactly what you're saying, but how the Pacers were using Miles wouldn't get a lot of rebounds. Miles was used on the outside a lot. One thing I did like what Nate did, Nate let him drive to the hole a lot, go behind his back and drive to the hole a lot. That's why Sabonis gets a lot of rebounds, because he's in the paint a lot, which I agree with you. It may be better for Miles, but if you don't trade and get some better guards to guard in here, and you trade Miles, we may only win 10 games next year.
Because
they can't stay in front of nobody. Or you're going to have to bring somebody back. You got to bring that coach, the defensive coach back, that Nate took with him. Didn't he take Dick with him?
Dan Burke played. He's in Philadelphia.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. He is in Philadelphia. And I think Danny Granger went to the Heat, right? He didn't go to Philly, did he? When we traded him away?
We did trade him for Evan Turner.
Oh, that's right. That's right. And he was hot garbage, too, a little bit. So, yeah. you know, I wasn't on this bandwagon at first. I think Nate needs another year. I think he realizes now that he can't talk to people the way he talks to people. And I think that the real culprit who needs to be fired and before the draft is Kevin. Kevin needs to go. Kevin truly needs to go. He's had his time here. I know at first he didn't have enough time because Bird, you know, the man. But Kevin Pritchard, he needs to go. He needs to go. I mean, he's done all this. The only thing he did was make good trades. You know, he got something for Paul George, he got something for Victor. But other than that, I mean, he got to go, man. He got to go. I'm really scared with him if he gets to pick the 13th pick. You know, I'm really scared of that. But another thing, y'all know Daryl Cott left the Colts organization a long time ago. He doesn't cheer for the Colts anymore. He stopped cheering for the Colts. I'm going to tell you the reason he stopped cheering for the Colts. Because we didn't draft one of the players he liked from Alabama. Daryl Cott stabbed you in the back.
He
used to be with Notre Dame, and he got mad because Notre Dame fired Ty. I was a little upset at first because they fired Ty, but they fired other coaches in the same situation. So I wasn't mad about it. Ty still got his money. Ty still got another chance. So Daryl goes to Alabama. And you know,
oh boy,
I mean, Alabama wouldn't even let a black
guy play
on the team at first, you know.
If you're going to disparage my name, make sure you let me know when to call in.
How did you let him get out here? He ain't supposed to
get
out here.
Hey, when you're the number one caller, you got a direct access line.
Listen, that's right. I got my access.
The number one caller.
Let me tell you something, right? Yeah, you're right. I'm not a Notre Dame fan, and I agree with you about Pritchard. He has to go, and Nate has to go also. And then we got to call down to Atlanta, get on our hands and knees, and ask Nate McMillan, will he come back? That's what we need to do.
What has Nate did for you in the playoffs?
We didn't have the player. We didn't have the players in the playoffs, and they don't have the. And they thought they had the players this season until the coach tore it all apart by verbally abusing players. So he has to go.
Man, it was the injuries. I like the faster pace. I like the things
we've done. This all one. It sounds great, but they couldn't guard an empty shoebox. Okay. They weren't playing any defense. That's the issue. In all seriousness. You've got to stop unless you want to go back to the ABA days and everybody's scoring 140 points a night. We got to.
Well, they're doing that now, ain't they? They're doing that
well,
now.
That's my point.
But hold on, because I'm at work and I want to finish this last point.
You're at work.
How the hell
are you going to leave
Notre Dame? How are you going to leave Notre Dame and go to Alabama? How are you going to leave the Colts and go to New England? Look, Stephen, let me tell you, it's simple.
They did Ty Willingham so wrong and gave that coach came behind him all that credit. But Ty had a pretty good record. He's a good guy and he deserved better. Secondly, I left the Colts because you're right. The owner said he wanted good character guys when there were Alabama players up and ready to come, right? So De'Ron Payne, Jonathan Allen, Colts passed on those guys, right? Because the owner, now this is the same owner who we saw on video in Carmel stumbling around his car on police video, says
I never watched it. I never watched
he
it.
Wants,
I never thought
well,
it.
You should watch it.
Hey, so you're going to go from that owner? You're going to go from that owner to an owner that goes to strip joints and massage parlors?
He's a man after my own heart.
Yeah, he'll take you to the massage parlor with you, right? Yeah, okay, right.
Listen, with all the money he's got, he can go wherever he wants. He's not breaking any laws getting a massage. That's all he was doing was getting him a solid.
Oh.
That's it. but in all seriousness,
This has been comedy gold for us in the show.
Hey, you know I love the show, man. You know, but I was tied up doing some stuff. I was working, actually really working, and I got a message. I said, oh, it's my quitting time anyway. So, and I lost track of time, so I'm glad I was able to call in. But are you all working in this week at all or no?
Not this week, no. I've got a busy rest of the week with the 500 at work.
So we may
try to do two shows next week.
Okay. Well, that's great
because I'm the number one caller again. That loser is out. He never was the number one caller, so he's out.
Jonathan, call me on the secret line and let me know how things are going, and we'll be okay.
Absolutely.
Hey, you guys be safe. I do have to go. And Reggie, don't forget, man, I still hate you as much as I always did, man.
Oh, you bum. Get out of here.
All right, later,
thanks, Decott. All right, Decott's off there.
I'm going to let y'all close down the show, but I'm back. I'm the number one. There's only one number one. He could be number three. We ain't going to move your number two guy down, but I'm number one. And you guys have a great day. Bird song, good point. Brandon, I'm off of you, man. You don't have no good points anymore. I'm off of you,
man.
You tripping, man.
Love you, Reg.
You guys have a great day. Love y'all, too. Later. Wow.
All right. John, what an ending to the show from what we were about to just go off the air.
Right, man, I have no words for it.
We just sat back and let them go at it. I didn't even want to announce it. Reggie was so going so much, I didn't even want to announce I had Decott on the line. So I said, you know what, I'll just patch Decott in immediately. Just to see that reaction. Because I hear you go, oh, wow.
Well, with that being said,
wrap us up, my man. Brandon, wrap us up tonight,
Brandon. I want to thank Danny Bridges from the Indianapolis Recorder for calling in, chatting up with us about all the goings on that's going to be happening with the Indy 500 this weekend. I want to thank, obviously, friends of the program, King Controls, Reggie Sykes, and D. Kai for calling in and for putting a little comedy cherry on top for the show. How could I also not forget our sponsors, both Scott K. Nichols State Farm Insurance and Mavericks Motors Custom Sports. Mavericks Motors, tongue twister, Brand. That's why
it is
tongue tied. Maverick Custom Motorsports. For being a sponsor, man, please, for the Crossroad listeners, audience, you know what I'm saying, click on the links that we have on our Facebook page. Check out the services that the both Scott K. Nichols and Mavericks have to offer. To help, you know what I'm saying, when you click the links and gaze upon what the services they have, whether it be insurance or whether it be, you know what I'm saying, pimping out your ride or whatnot, it helps us tremendously. So again, I want to say thank you to our sponsors as well. Outside of that, Brandon, I know your eyes and ears will be glued onto the 500 this weekend. As mine will, I'll be listening to it on the radio if it is a blackout. Outside of that, man, I'll be watching, you know what I'm saying, some playoff basketball just like everybody else, man. Outside of that, man, Brandon, next week, keep on listening, man. I love it.
Absolutely. Thanks, John.
Thanks for listening to the Crossroads Sports Radio Show. You can find more episodes on iTunes and the Google Play Store. Be sure to like and subscribe for more Crossroads Sports content.